Now, the precise nature of authority in this sense may become clearer if we consider something of a similar nature, something for which there's really no proper word in English, but we can call it perhaps representing or even representation. Let's say A, a person, represents B, another person or persons. A represents B. Now, what does this mean when we say that A represents B? A few concrete examples may help. An ambassador, especially what used to be called and perhaps still is called an ambassador extraordinary and plenipotentiary, represents the king. The MP, the member of parliament, represents, I believe, his constituency. The salesman, even the humble door-to-door salesman, represents his firm. And the delegate, we may say, represents his trades union. So A, whether ambassador, MP, salesman, delegate, represents B, whether king, constituency, firm, union, and so on. In other words, in certain respects, or for certain purposes, someone is entrusted with the power of the group or the organization to which he belongs. And what he does, what he accepts, what he agrees to, the group does, the group accepts, the group agrees to. And this is what is meant by representing, or being a representative. So we can see, we can understand that the power which the representative exercises is not his own power. It is the power of some other person or other persons, and in the latter case, it's the power of the group. And it's much the same in the case of authority. Here also, in the case of authority, a person does not exercise power by virtue of what he is as an individual, whether even a statistical individual or a true individual. He exercises that power by virtue of his office, by virtue of his position. His qualities as an individual may, of course, fit him for that particular position, but the power he exercises in that position derives from the position and not from the personal qualities which he happens to possess. In other words, the power he exercises is not his own power. It belongs to his office, to his position. And this office, this position, is created by the particular group or organization to which he belongs, so that power therefore belongs to the group. Now, from all this, there follows an important conclusion. We've seen that the person who represents, or the person who exercises authority, is entrusted with, or exercises power which is not his own, power that belongs in the last resort, in the last analysis, to the group. It therefore follows that when we deal with someone as representing, or when we deal with someone as occupying a position of authority, we are not dealing with them as an individual, and they also are not functioning as an individual. And from this follows another conclusion, a conclusion even more important than the first one. We've seen that the spiritual community consists of individuals, that is to say, of true individuals. And this means that within the spiritual community, we can deal with others only as individuals. If we deal with them in any other way, it ceases to be the spiritual community, and our relationship with them within the spiritual community ceases to be a spiritual relationship. Therefore, within the context of the spiritual community, we cannot deal with others as representing. We cannot deal with them as occupying offices or positions. And therefore, within the spiritual community, As such, there can be no offices and no positions. If we deal with people in this sort of way, we are not dealing with them as individuals. And therefore, ipso facto, we are not functioning within the spiritual community, we're functioning within the group. In other words, within the spiritual community, there's no representing. Within the spiritual community, there's no authority in the sense in which I've defined the term. Therefore, within the new society, no authority. Within Sukhavati, no authority. Within the resident spiritual community, no authority. Within the cooperative, no authority. In the cooperative, after all, who employs whom? Within the centre, no authority, except to the extent that one may have to deal with people who are not yet true individuals. Because, as I said earlier, the centre is the bridge. The centre is the common ground. That is to say, common ground for individuals and group members. That is to say, group members who want to become true individuals. Now, the idea that when we deal with others as representing, etc., we're not dealing with them as individuals, may not be very familiar. May take a little getting used to. So let me give just one or two examples of the sort of thing I mean, the sort of thing I'm trying to get at or to make clear. A few examples from my own experience. As you know, I spent some years in India. I spent altogether nearly 20 years there, and while I was in India, I immersed myself completely in Buddhism. I had no other interest, and I adopted, in order to further my immersion in Buddhism, I adopted the Indian way of life completely. I became, to all intents and purposes, an Indian. Sometimes I was taken for an Indian, sometimes, but not always, as we shall see in a minute. And I cut off all contact with the European community. Sometimes for years on end, in my earlier days, I never spoke to any member of the European community. Nonetheless, some of my Indian friends, or at least some of the Indians with whom I came into contact, persisted, notwithstanding my Buddhism, notwithstanding my Indianness, persisted in regarding me as British. In fact, some of them insisted on regarding me as representing Britain. Now, remember in particular the sort of thing that used to happen in 1956. In 1956, Indians who happened to meet me, whether on the train or at some meeting or coming to see me, in 1956, Indians would ask me, "Why have you invaded Suez?" It wasn't even, "Why has your country invaded Suez?" No, "Why have you invaded Suez?" There was I in India all the time, immersed in Buddhism. So what does this mean? It means that they did not see me. They did not see the individual, Sangharakshita. They only saw a representative of Britain. And they treated me as such. The same sort of thing happened when I returned to England, initially for the first time in 1964. When I returned to England, when I found myself once again in England, I was regarded as representing Buddhism. Newspaper reporters used to come and see me, usually nice young ladies with their notebooks and pencils. And they'd come with all sorts of weird ideas about Buddhism. And they'd ask me in the nicest possible way, "Why do you believe in self-torture?" Once again, they didn't see me. They made no attempt to find out what I actually did believe. They saw me simply as the representative of Buddhism. That is to say, of Buddhism as they understood it. There was no awareness of me as an individual at all. So when we regard someone as a representative, as representing something or other. We do not see them as an individual. And our relationship with them to that extent cannot possibly be an individual, therefore cannot possibly be a spiritual relationship, and it therefore has no place within the spiritual community. It has no place within the new society.